On today's episode of Locked On Nets, Josh Bass goes solo to break down the two huge blowout wins by the Nets. Caris LeVert is back and dispels some trade rumors around Spencer Dinwiddie. Coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome back into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Of course, we are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your home for daily coverage of your favorite team, whether it's basketball, baseball, football, college. We will be there. For me, it's my beloved Nets, and I am riding a high right now because of consecutive blowout wins for the Nets. Boy, it feels good to say a 22-point victory against the Suns on Monday, which I was in attendance with my co-host Marcus Barahal, who unfortunately cannot be here today, was sick, feeling under the weather, lost his voice, probably from all the screaming we did at the Suns game. And then tonight, a impressive 41-point win over the Golden State Warriors by the Nets. You know, a win over a 12-40 team is tough to be impressive, but when you do it by 41 points, you get that validation from me. So it's been a fun couple of days in Nets land. I think after the Saturday loss against the Zards, I was feeling pretty defeated because Nets blew that lead, and more importantly, Kyrie Irving suffering another injury. We'll see what the timetable looks like on this one. He's going to be reevaluated basically over the weekend, and we'll see from there. If it's only another couple of days, or maybe it's going to be another week or two, I think still a lot TBD, of course, with every Kyrie injury. But I think biggest takeaway from these couple of games, and you know, we're going to get into some trade discussion later, getting my take on the deals that have already happened or been announced, and also some of the rumors the Nets have been involved in. But I think really from a on-court perspective, the biggest story has to be Caris LeVert's resurgence. You know, he had really, really been struggling, I think, this season as a whole, especially since he came back from his thumb injury. I know that I was been ripping him on many pods, and it seems like whenever I rip him, dating back to last year, he immediately picks it up. So maybe Caris is a listener. Caris, if you're out there, smash that subscribe button, rate us, review us, and you know where to find us. But these last couple of games, he's really done a nice job putting it together. 29 points against the Suns, 10 of 20 from the field, got to the line 7 times. And then tonight against the Warriors, 23 points, 8 assists. I thought he was awesome in that first half, and the second half, a little bit more turnover prone, but I think it was kind of garbage time the entire second half, which you never really say, but I'm more so taking into account what he did in the first half. And I mean, shooting the ball very well, 5 of 9 from 3 in these two games, 11 of 11 on free throws. The Suns game actually started out with him getting to the basket off a cut, wide open, and missed an easy layup, and I was groaning, said, here we go again. He doesn't have it tonight, but he was able to pick it up. I mean, he seems in control. Obviously, there's going to be, with any Caris LeVert game, he's going to miss some easy shots, whether it's just kind of a lack of concentration, lack of touch. That seems like it's been a bugaboo of his since he dated it back into the league, and a big reason why he's not shooting better right at the rim and two-point percentage overall. It's something that I'd love to see him fix, but it just doesn't seem likely at this point. That's going to be a part of his game. But overall, his ability to create shots in bunches, both from three, at the basket, and mid-range, and also find his teammates, has been a really welcome sign. And, you know, with Kyrie out, the Nets really needed Caris to step up, because Dinwiddie's definitely not played well over these two games, but they needed Caris to be that creator alongside Spencer, and also when Spencer's out, to be that main guy, and he's certainly lived up to this. And if he can keep up this play, it will be really interesting to see how things shake out once Kyrie's back. And it might just be, listen, if Caris plays continuously well and then Kyrie comes back and he just doesn't know where his role fits in, it might make sense for the Nets to evaluate trading him at in the offseason. But I think where they are right now, it didn't make any sense to really explore much for him at the deadline, just because his value is at a nadir right now. You know, he's had such a tough season. There's been questions on fit. Obviously, injuries are always going to be a concern for him. And when you look at his overall stat line, it's not pretty. So what they could get for him is going to be kind of paltry compared to if he's able to be consistent the rest of the season, or even just continue to show flashes without Kyrie, what they're going to be able to get for him. Because remember, his value was probably, certainly higher than D'Angelo Russell's before he went down in that Minnesota game last year. He was really the prize possession of this Nets rebuild. And with Dinwiddie's emergence and the huge superstars signing with the team and Kyrie and KD, he's kind of been pushed to the background. But he's definitely shown over these last couple games that he is someone to be reckoned with and can be an important piece when he's going well. But the Suns game overall, I mean, was a really nice performance from the Nets. They shot the three ball well. I thought TLC gave them a really nice boost from the bench. He was the main guy that took over Kyrie's minutes, getting 25. A little surprising to see him out there over Rhodey, just because I think Rhodey has, I'd say, much more talent, and they've overall invested more in his development. But, if TLC's hitting shots, he definitely gives a lot of effort, even though he's not the most consistent defensive player. So I think what he was able to provide was pretty interesting. Joe Harris had a nice game as well. Overall, really clean game from the Nets. They did turn the ball over a lot, but it was a pretty up-and-down affair. And I think one thing with Phoenix, they're definitely not a good defensive team, but especially with all the young guys they're playing, they're not super disciplined. They're going for a lot of steals and getting in passing lanes, which is very high-risk, high-reward. But when you look at this Phoenix team, I mean, these are people the Nets should beat, especially with Devin Booker only going 3 of 15. He had an off night. There were some easy jump shots that he normally cans that he just couldn't get to go down. It was mainly DeAndre Ayton providing the offense for Phoenix. He was getting on the offensive glass a lot, and, you know, he's someone that is not shy in jacking up a 15-footer. He finished the night with 25 and 17, but I think the Nets did a nice job. I mean, only holding him to two free throws, he had to take 22 shots to get those 25 points. And in this modern NBA, even if a big guy is pretty good shooting out 16 or 18 feet, you're definitely going to live with that, unless it's someone who's completely automatic, like an Al Horford type or LaMarcus Aldridge, where you really need to run out of them. But, I mean, Phoenix is, like, their key backups are Eli Okobo, Javon Carter, Jalen Leck was playing, Cheick Diallo. The Nets were able to handle them easily, as they should, and it's a nice win. Specifically considering that Phoenix destroyed the Nets in Phoenix earlier this year. It was embarrassing. Ricky Rubio just fully controlled the pace of the game, and I think they won by 26 or so. But it's nice to see the Nets get that rebound and especially be able to build their confidence in the first game post Kyrie's new injury. So, and want to talk about the Warriors game. I mean, this was definitely, it was a laugher. I think, one, nice to see D'Angelo come back. In his return, he was throwing up a lot of shots, minus 48, which is, that might have to be, I need to check if that's a record, because minus 48 in the game, I can't remember seeing that before. Even some of the, I mean, the Nets, plus Caris LeVert, plus 43, some of these are just such outliers. Marquise Chris, minus 42, but I mean, the Nets beat them down, so I guess it makes sense. Nice to see D'Lo get his tribute video, even though there was some questions on whether he was actually enjoying it. But it's just sad to see this Warriors team the way they are. And I've thought this all year, but going from an all-time great dynasty, I think right up there with Jordan's Bulls and Shaq and Kobe's Lakers, to what they are now, where it's Eric Paschal, Marquise Chris, Damian Lee. And I guess things are a little bit more institutionalized now with Draymond back. And hopefully with Klay back soon, they're able to at least puts together something that resembles a professional basketball team out there. But the Nets were able to get any shot that they wanted against this team, whether it was Caris LeVert driving. Joe Harris was able to get a bunch of easy buckets. I think he had 15 in the first half. So he had a really nice game there. Might have had all of his points in the first half. And then it was a good opportunity for guys like Rhodey Kurz to get a lot of playing time. He looked great early, 7 points in the first couple minutes where he was there, scoring off a cut, getting to the line, hitting a three, and just a nice game for everyone to get their confidence up. Jean and Musa getting some shots at the end of the game. But overall, this is the kind of win the Nets need. And, you know, in this 7-game stretch that we talked about, saying, hey, this is a very easy part of the schedule. They're going to need to make a lot of headway. There were some disappointing games. I think you point to the Knicks one being the kind of classic example of that, but they were able to go 5-2. And I think one of the key games from this seven-game stretch was Kyrie's carrying the team late against Detroit when they kind of looked down and out, were able to get the game to overtime, could have won in regulation but didn't after Kyrie took kind of an early shot towards the end of the game where they still had some time to chew off on the shot clock, but are able to handle them in overtime. And you just think, hey, if the Nets don't get that win, things look a lot different. I think morale especially is a lot different. But now a game and a half up on Orlando, five games up over the Bulls in that nine spot, it looks pretty good for the Nets right now. I don't think there was ever a ton of doubt on them making the playoffs, but I think things look pretty solidified at this point, barring any sort of collapse or miraculous rise from the Bulls or Pistons or Wizards, which I don't think we can need to expect because those teams are generally kind of down and out right now and losing a lot of hope. Trade deadline season is upon us. I want to tell you guys about a really fun promo that we're doing here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We're pre-bombing the Woj bombs. There's already been a few, but there still will be plenty more to come, I'm sure. Either a Woj bomb or a Shams Wow, if that's more your speed. This is what we're going to do. You're going to have to correctly predict a Woj bomb, guessing an NBA trade exactly to win tickets to see your favorite NBA team. Basically, this is what you're going to do. You're posting the trade that you think will happen to one of the Locked On NBA accounts on either Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You have to follow that account. You're going to tag five people in your reply on the trade, like the post, and if your trade is correct and accurate, you will have the opportunity to win two tickets to see your favorite team play in their home arena. Sounds like a pretty sweet deal, and who knows, maybe an internship with Woj or Shams is on the line, or maybe you should just go out and play the lottery because you're that lucky or you're that smart of a basketball fan. Anyway, something pretty cool that we're doing on the Locked On Podcast Network. Please go check it out and participate, and good luck. So I want to talk about some trades, trade rumor, first of all, one involving the Nets. I'm seeing a ton of people throw out this Aaron Gordon for Spencer Dinwiddie trade right now. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Spencer's too valuable right now to the Nets. And even more so, not only his play on the court, but just what he means as the backup kind of safety valve for Kyrie Irving. Because I think he is obviously an incredible player. And he's someone that is going to need to be a cornerstone on this Nets team if they want to win a championship. But he is just so injury prone right now that he's not someone that you can rely on without having a guy that can come in, fill in for his shoes, and basically give 85 to 90% of the production, which is what Spencer Dinwiddie has done for most of the year. So to trade him for a guy in Aaron Gordon, who I really like, but I think has become vastly overrated by the general public. I mean, Aaron Gordon, this is his sixth year in the league. His progress has certainly not even plateaued, probably declined. He's 24 years old right now, will be 25 in September. He's not on a terrible contract or anything like that, $18 million a year, but he's never really progressed as a three-point shooter. He's become okay, but nothing special. 35% was his career high, now only 30% this year. He's not a good free throw shooter. He kind of struggles shooting twos when you think he would be dynamic given his athleticism, but he doesn't really have the handle to get to the rim well. He's kind of going to be best as a Draymond Green type, which is what everyone keeps saying he's going to be used as. But there's no evidence that he's actually been putting in the work for that. You know, he's a good defender, an incredible athlete, but overall, he's tried to morph himself into more of an offensive player rather than embracing that defensive skill set. So he may have it, he may have the raw tools, but the thing about Draymond Green that separates him is his mentality, and his mentality to be that one of the best defensive player in the league, if not the best, and being able to guard all five positions. And if he didn't put that work in, he would just be merely a good defender and not the guy who's going to end up making the Hall of Fame. So for me, with a guy like Aaron Gordon, you can't just say, hey, we're going to take this player, make him our Draymond Green. He has to show significant progress to becoming like that. And especially when you look at, even looking at his some of his defensive numbers, particularly kind of the steals and block rate, which I know don't tell you everything. For a guy with his size and athleticism, his steal and block rate should basically be at least 50% more than where they are. It's pretty bleak right now for him. And not to say he's a bad defender or anything like that, but right now, offensively, he's not a guy that's going to raise, that's not going to help you reach your ceiling. He's not really much of a floor raiser. Defensively, he's solid, but nothing spectacular for sure. He could have the potential to get there in a better system, and especially a system like the Nets, he might look better offensively with the floor spaced and having point guards that can really get him the ball in the right places. But he seems like a guy to me that people love the idea of him and love that he's a dunk contest champion. But in terms of actual production on the court, there's no way that you can say that it would be worthwhile to give up Spencer Dinwiddie for him, especially when Dinwiddie's locked in on such a favorable contract for the Nets right now. So if there's a way that the Nets can get Gordon for someone else, maybe like a LeVert type, that's something I'd consider because I'm much higher on Dinwiddie than I am LeVert, despite LeVert's recent nice two-game stretch. But to give up Spencer for him, a guy who has shown that he can lead the Nets and be kind of that key focal point on offense, taking up a lot of usage and being relatively efficient with it, I just don't think there's any alignment on the value of those two players. On other trades, we heard earlier tonight that Woj reported that Iguodala will be getting traded to Miami. Pat Riley is going to sign him to a two-year, $30 million extension. I think Ripple for the rest of the Eastern Conference, it's interesting to know that everyone feels that there is an opportunity to go for it, and it seems like Miami especially feels that Milwaukee could be vulnerable. Makes sense for them to make a push for Iggy, and they're potentially going after Gallinari as well from OKC. I think we're going to get into it more. I don't love necessarily the extension. I don't think he raises what they're trying to do too much, but it's interesting of what it means for the overall Eastern Conference, especially if other teams continue to put chips on the table to make a win now move. We are in the thick of trade deadline rumors right now with about another 14 or 15 hours to go here at the time of recording this. I don't want to speculate too much because Marcus and I will be back after the trade deadline is complete to break it all down for you. But I think we're going to be in for another very exciting half a day. We already had that 12-player trade, which was absolutely bananas. Dewayne Dedmon going back to the team that he had just left in the offseason, Atlanta. That will be interesting. Excited to see how Covington shakes out on the Rockets. Capella with Atlanta alongside Collins and Trae Young. Should be an interesting time. We'll be back in your ear soon. But in the meantime, follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. I am at JMBass_. Marcus is at Marcus Bearhall. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, and until next time, be well.